get ready for the unstoppable, the uncatchable, and the unexplorable. Get ready for the unbodied fantasy radio theater. This month's episode is entitled The House Chronicles Part 2 and was written by Jeff Sink.
Henry was beginning to regret his decision. He and Marcus had been traveling down the Great Hall from Round Tower to Many Chimneys for only half an hour, but it had been long enough for doubt to accumulate in his mind. Doubt that they could ever find the flying man, whom they sought, and doubt about this mysterious woman, Mia, whom they accompanied. They hardly knew her. They hardly knew this area. Why had Henry been convinced to come along? He considered the events of the last day. Marcus spotting a man flying through the sky, the run-in with Mia, during which he'd almost had his throat cut, and finally the choice he had made, against his better judgment, to follow Marcus and Mia in their pursuit of the flying man. At the end of these thoughts was completion, the ceremony through which he and Marcus would become adult citizens of the house, gaining the right, or was it the responsibility, to begin a trade, settle down, and accept their place. Completion was in 2 days. For Marcus, the onset of completion seemed to evoke a fair amount of anxiety in him, but not for Henry. He thought completion would not seriously alter his life. He had worked for his father in the garden before, and he would continue, probably until his death. It was predictable. It was what he knew he'd be doing from the time he was little, and that made him feel safe. So why did he come along on this wild goose chase, when doing so could easily ruin his chances of going through completion and becoming an adult? The answer walked beside him. Marcus, practically dashing across the floor, was hard for Henry to keep up with, but he'd been doing it since they were kids. From the time they were 8 years old, Marcus had been getting Henry into trouble with his crazy daydreams. At least, that was how Henry would have explained it to anyone, pushing the blame lightly on Marcus. Inside, though, Henry knew that he fell into every one of those adventures with a consenting fervor, relishing the possibility of discovery that each of Marcus's plans brought. Maybe that explained why he was running down the Great Hall, under its bowed marble columns and across the ivory tiles that radiated from one side of the wall to the next, racing toward Many Chimneys. This appeared similar to any of their past adventures, but it wasn't. Never before had they gotten tangled up in something this big, this mysterious. Most of Marcus's schemes fizzled out by day's end, and Henry wound up returning home to a warm dinner and a soft bed. But this time, Henry sensed the enormity of their undertaking. He wasn't sure they could handle it. He felt like he was in the bath, watching the water rise to his chin, then lap at his mouth. It was time to pull the plug. "Hey, Marcus?"
"Yeah," Marcus said quickly. He slowed a bit but didn't stop walking.
"I know you're going to hate this, but I have to tell you something."
Henry paused and Marcus looked at him, eyes narrowing. "Don't tell me you're thinking about..."
Marcus trailed off, his gaze shifting from Henry to the view out a nearby window.
"Did you see that?" Marcus asked, not to Henry but to Mia.
"I did," Mia responded. They approached the window. Without pausing, Mia threw it open and climbed out onto a sloping roof.
"What are you doing?" Henry called.
"Do you see him there?"
Marcus pointed roughly as he stepped through the open window himself. Henry looked in that direction and saw it, a man bobbing in the air. He couldn't have been more than a couple hundred yards away, with a gray, elliptically shaped object strapped to his back. Henry watched him swivel sharply to the left to avoid a decomposing chimney. Out of the corner of Henry's eye, Marcus and Mia appeared. They had sprinted down to the edge of the roof, as close as they could get to the flying man. Mia shouted. The man turned and caught sight of them. He clenched his right fist and rocketed upward. Mia ran up and down the edge of the roof, searching for a bridge to bring her closer to the flying man. Not finding one, she halted, knelt down, and pulled something from her backpack. With her arm stretched out, she pointed the thing directly at the flying man. A metallic crack popped from the device, and Henry saw a thin black line spiral into the sky. It pierced the flying man on his back, provoking a stream of smoke from the machine. The flying man slowed to a stop in the air. Then he began to fall. Henry watched the flying man swing savagely at his back as he plunged downward. He picked up speed as he fell further. Henry felt fear strike his body like an icy sting. His skin began to tingle. The man shot down past Mia and Marcus and out of view. Henry shouted involuntarily, his own body twisted in shock. He took several short, quick breaths before that cold feeling intensified, sending tremors up and down his limbs. He stood there, petrified, before slowly going onto the roof. He had to discover what had become of the flying man. With every shaky step, Henry neared his two companions. They seemed to remain locked in position at the end of the roof. They took no notice of him. "What the hell is wrong with you?" Henry yelled, his voice uneven. Marcus turned to address Henry. His face was expressionless. "Henry, come on, let's go back up to the hall to wait for Mia."
"What? There's no way I'm doing that,"
Henry answered, stepping away from the two.
"I'm not going any further with her."
"It's okay, everything's fine, let's just..."
"Everything's not fine. She just tried to kill that man."
"I wasn't trying to kill him," Mia said. Her voice was low. She turned around and Henry saw tears splashed across her eyes.
"What happened then?"
Henry answered, the intensity drained from his voice. Mia walked past him and up to the open window.
"She wanted to stop him," Marcus explained. "She thought if she could damage his machine, he would land close by. But she shot something important and the machine stopped working altogether. She didn't mean for that to happen."
The two began climbing up the roof. Henry hesitated before asking his next question.
"So did he die?"
"Mia doesn't think so. She told me that the flying man has a parachute, which he might have used to save himself."
"Did you see him use it?" Henry asked.
He passed through the open window and back into the hall. Mia was already ahead of them.
"He fell too quickly. We tried to see him, but he just fell too quickly."
Marcus closed the window, then said, "I don't think she was trying to hurt him."
Henry watched Mia proceeding down the hall. "No, I don't think so either," he finally said.
"You wanted to say something to me earlier?" Marcus asked.
Henry shook his head. "It's fine now, I think. Come on." Within the end of the following hour, they had reached Many Chimneys. The great hall broadened into an open plaza with a high ceiling. Everything here was composed of bricks, from the floor and the posts to the benches and the tables in the center. Throngs of people circulated around the space. Near the periphery of the plaza, several tunnels snaked off into the far interior of the house. For the first time since the encounter with the flying man, Mia spoke.
"He's probably gotten here already. We'll need to split up. Marcus, go to the blacksmith's and ask around to see if anyone has come to purchase parts. He'll probably be looking for a metal fuel pipe and some tools to solder his machine. Henry, find us a map of Many Chimneys and ask someone where the highest place around here is. That will be his departure point when he's ready to leave again."
"And you?" Henry asked.
"I'll be busy too, preparing," Mia said. "We'll meet back here in the evening."
She walked away.
"We've got our assignments then," Marcus said. "Where do you think the blacksmith is?"
"The sign says it's to the left."
"Okay."
Marcus started off, but Henry caught him by the shoulder.
"What is it?" he said.
"Do you think we can do this?"
"Of course we can," Marcus answered. "We'll just stick to what Mia told us to do. It'll be simple. Don't you think so?"
Henry looked around.
"I'm not so sure. Here we are in this strange part of the house. We don't know anyone here, and I think we don't know what we're doing either."
Marcus sighed loudly.
"I don't know what I'm doing."
"Don't doubt yourself. You're smart. You can think on your toes. Just keep your eyes open and you'll be fine. Gotta go."
Marcus pulled away and headed to the left. Henry stood there for a moment, considering his own path. He chose a tunnel on the far right. Henry passed several pottery workshops. In the front room of each shop, the walls were lined with bulbous jugs, stacks of plates, and bowls of varying shapes. Occasionally, Henry, through an open door, caught a glimpse of the kiln in the back room, and workers pulling newly fired items from its oblong bowels. Above each kiln, a chimney rose to the ceiling. It was the profusion of these chimneys that gave the area its name, but it was the personality of the workers that gave many chimneys its reputation. Next to the kiln, some workers sat at a table, drinking beer and playing poker. One man slapped his cards down on the table, and his fellow players bellowed in surprise. A moment later, a woman appeared and spoke to the men, who then regretfully rose to their feet and returned to work. Henry was transfixed by the spectacle. A shop in Round Tower with workers like these would be labeled as unproductive. The council would have likely revoked their business license for having such lax standards. Yet, in many chimneys, this behavior was tolerated. In fact, they almost seemed to organize around the workers' preferences, which made the fact that every shop here was busy even more baffling to Henry. He tried to reconcile between his standards and this reality, but found he could not. He moved on. The tunnel brought Henry to another row of businesses. The first, a coffee shop whose interior was wrapped in oak, was no help. The patrons seemed unconcerned with him, and the owner couldn't understand why Henry would want a map. In the antique store nearby, a man tried to sell him a map of many chimneys, one that was well over 100 years old. Henry couldn't see the value in it, but he did consider buying it for Marcus. He would have loved to compare the historical layout of the area with the current one. Henry ultimately decided against the purchase and left the store. Outside, he was met by a guy roughly his age. "Hey, man," the guy said. He was tall and stocky, but not as tall as Henry. "Hi," Henry answered. He stepped forward to leave, but the guy pressed in closely.
"What are you doing?"
The question startled Henry. "I'm just looking for something." He attempted to move away again and was blocked by the guy.
"What are you looking around for?"
he asked. His voice rose.
"You shouldn't be here. Where are you from?"
Henry thought that, for this person, there must be a right and a wrong answer to that question. He wondered which his would be. "Round Tower?"
"Round Tower?" the boy grimaced. "My brother says that all the people from Round Tower are stuck-up snobs."
"Well, that's not true." Henry's adversary took a step closer to him.
"You think my brother's a liar, then?"
Another tricky question. "No, I don't...
"You know you're right. People from Round Tower aren't snobs. They're scared little lambs, frightened of everything."
"Hey, just let me leave, okay?"
"You gonna run away?"
the boy mocked. He shoved Henry and he collided with the wall behind him. Henry sprang away from the wall, arms up. "Leave me alone," Henry said. The boy pushed him again.
"You want me to leave you alone? Is this too much for you?"
The boy curled his hand into a fist. He swiped at Henry's head, catching him on the right temple and sending sparks of pain across his face. The shock of the collision jolted Henry, and reflexively his own fist shot up, connecting with the boy's chin. The boy cringed and massaged his jaw with his hand.
"You ass," he spat.
The boy reached into his pocket and pulled something out. "Ah, good, another knife," Henry said to himself. The boy lifted the knife and stabbed at Henry. Henry flinched and the boy missed. He took another pass at him, but Henry jumped to the left. He tripped on an uneven brick and fell over, his arm bracing his awkward tumble. Henry quickly got to his feet and scrambled to get away. He ran to another tunnel and plunged into it. The boy trailed him. Henry came upon a flight of stairs that he took two at a time to keep ahead. When Henry got to the top, he looked back and saw the boy half a dozen steps below. Henry burst forward and, seeing only a high wooden fence on one side and a series of doors on the other, quickly sized up the height of the fence and vaulted himself over it. He landed hard on the other side, but immediately lifted his head up to listen. He heard the scuffle of footsteps near him, and then a pause.
"Are you hiding?"
the boy yelled. His footsteps resumed, first close to the fence, then further away, then up close again. Suddenly the fence began to shake greatly, and Henry thought the boy was trying to tear it down. The subsequent crashing sound, however, and a grunt, convinced him that the boy was actually attempting to climb the fence himself. There was another growl from the boy, but nothing more. Henry laid his head back onto the ground. Realizing the soreness in his body from his harsh landing, he massaged his knees.
"That's not the most comfortable place to lay in the garden."
Henry whipped around. He saw a woman standing over him.
"Of course," she continued as Henry sat up, "the strawberries are definitely more comfortable than the pumpkins, and the leaves aren't as rough."
Henry perceived the red, gooey substance smeared all over him. He wiped pulverized strawberries from his hands.
"I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to destroy your strawberry patch. I was trying to get away from some guy."
"Well, the guy you'll really want to get away from is my husband, once he sees what you've done here." Henry pushed up onto his feet.
"I'll pay for it. I could probably even get you strawberries from my own garden by the end of the day. Oh, I don't want more trouble."
He rubbed his temples.
"I was just kidding," the woman said. "My husband won't mind. But you said you had a garden? Where is it?"
"In Round Tower. My father and I run it." The woman raised an eyebrow.
"Someone from Round Tower? Does your council know you're here?"
Henry looked away.
"Not exactly."
"Well, don't worry. I certainly won't notify them, and even if I told my own council, they wouldn't care to speak to yours. No offense. Do you want something to drink?"
Henry nodded, and the woman motioned for him to sit at a table. She entered a small shed nearby and came out with a pitcher and two glasses.
"I'm Lena, by the way."
"I'm Henry."
Lena poured some water for the two of them.
"What brings you to our part of the house?"
"I'm just helping out a friend," Henry answered, after taking a big gulp of water.
"Not the guy who was chasing you?"
"No, no, someone else, friendlier than he was."
Henry looked around. He saw several gardens, delineated by a criss-crossing gravel path. People meandered down the path carrying bags of soil or empty pots. Near them, an older woman stooped over a pepper plant, inspecting its fruits.
"What is this place?"
"Well, it's our garden."
"But then what are all these other people doing here?"
Lena smiled.
"Well, it's not just our garden, it's the neighborhood garden. Anyone in the area can have a plot here."
She noticed the quizzical look on Henry's face.
"You don't have places like this in Round Tower?"
"No, we have one garden, and it provides food for the whole community."
Lena poured Henry some more water.
"Well, here we have community gardens. Everyone comes here to plant."
"Do you assign who can plant which crops?"
Lena chuckled.
"Of course not. People can plant whatever they want, though they usually plant food they like to eat."
"Seems inefficient to me," Henry said bluntly. "It really only takes a few people to run a garden. All these other people should be doing something else. It's a waste of time."
"Do you think working in your garden is a waste of time?"
"No, but I enjoy the work."
"And so do we, all of us here."
Lena pointed to the others in the garden. Some were alone, some were in groups, but all were busy managing their plots.
"It's fun to see the plants growing and feel the anticipation of harvest, and it gives me a chance to talk with my neighbors. I don't think it's a waste of time."
"So your council set up these gardens?"
"We set up these gardens. We didn't need permission."
"But how do you keep things organized?"
"We organize ourselves. We, the gardeners, decide how the garden should work."
Henry scowled slightly.
"I don't understand why your council doesn't get more involved. Food production is part of its jurisdiction."
"True, but our council doesn't feel that it should be dictating how we get our food. Our council doesn't believe that's its business."
Henry shook his head.
"How does it work in Round Tower?" Lena asked.
"Our council advises my father and me on how much food is needed, and what types of food are needed, and we grow it. That way everyone is accounted for."
"Hmm, that is comprehensive," Lena said, in a tone similar to one a person might employ when describing a boring chore. "It sounds like it provides everything that you need, anyway."
Henry continued.
"Yes, I don't see how your gardens here are designed to be productive, especially if you can do whatever you want."
"Well, we can't do whatever we want," Lena said. "We have rules as well. It's just that the gardeners make the rules, not the council. We know what our community needs better than the council, so why not be in charge of this, at least?"
"Because you could adopt rules that unfairly benefit yourself, at the expense of your neighbors. There's no oversight."
No policing, that's for sure,
Lena admitted.
But believe me, it's much more difficult for me to try to take advantage of my neighbor than it is for a stranger in the council to do so. I can't hide behind an office.
I guess not. Henry peered into the bottom of his glass.
Here we watch each other's backs. If my neighbor needs a little extra, he knows that someone else has it for him. And maybe next year he'll have what someone else needs.
Henry said quietly. He watched the older woman meander over to another gardener to chat.
I can see that I've yet to convince you of our perfect setup here, Lena said.
It's just different for me, Henry responded. We've always done things the same way in Round Tower generation after generation. I guess I thought everyone did it that way, too.
There's more than one way to plant a garden.
True.
Well, Lena said and stood up quickly. If you aren't impressed by how we run our garden, then maybe I can astound you with some of our produce. Come here.
She headed past the shed, and Henry followed. She guided him through the web of pathways to a collection of squash plants occupying a mound of dirt. Beneath the large pad-like leaves, several crookneck squashes were nestled. Their waxy yellow bodies were adorned with dusty red stripes weaving around and through their raised ridges. Henry quickly bent over to examine one.
This is great!
He turned the gourd around to see the entire pattern.
You like it? Telly, one of the ladies, grew it.
But I've never seen a squash like this before, Lena smiled.
That's because it doesn't grow anywhere else. It was developed here just this past spring.
How? Henry asked, his eyes still on the plant.
She selected for that color. A few years ago, she noticed that one of her squash plants had faint red bands growing across the vegetable. She took seeds from that plant and grew them the next year, making sure to cross-pollinate the plants amongst themselves. And sure enough, all those squashes had red marks too, darker this time. She just kept cross-pollinating the plants, and the bands got darker and darker each time. I bet in a few generations they could be almost black.
Well, that's amazing.
And that's not the half of it, Lena said, turning to look over the rest of the garden. Some other people have grown pink onions, potatoes that can be grown with practically no water, and the biggest peas you've ever seen. We do a lot of experimenting here.
Henry looked over the garden, too.
How many plants have you developed? Lena asked.
Not many. It's a bad investment for us. If we made a mistake, it would wipe out the entire crop that year, and we'd have nothing to eat.
Ah, Lena said, nodding. It would be dangerous to test out a change on an entire crop. But here we don't have that problem. With so many people, we have plenty of different plants growing in all the gardens. If one person's squash dies, it's not so devastating because they can borrow from someone else. That means that a person can experiment with new variations, knowing that if it fails, they still eat at night.
See, our system's not so bad. Henry blushed.
I guess not.
Could you show me some more of the plants you mentioned?
I'd be delighted.
Lena took him through the gardens, pointing out the new plants and introducing him to their creators. When Henry finally came upon the meeting place, Mia and Marcus were waiting.
Good evening, he said.
Mia gave a small, tight smile.
We've set up a small place to stay, she said, motioning to a tunnel some ways away from them.
The three began walking.
Let's not like you to be late, Marcus said. And what happened to your clothes?
Henry sighed.
It's been quite a day, he answered. I ran into some trouble, got a knife pulled on me again.
He stopped suddenly to gauge Mia's reaction, but she had none.
And somehow I ended up in a set of gardens. They were so different from mine. I spent the rest of the day looking around them and speaking with the people there.
And the map? Mia asked, not turning around.
I got that too. I ran by a library before coming here.
I found out that the Flying Man has been here in many chimneys, Marcus said. A blacksmith told me that a man with a strange device in a bag asked him to repair a few things for him. That's got to be the Flying Man.
So he's repaired his machine. Won't that mean that he'll leave soon? Henry asked. We've got to go look for him.
He won't fly at night, Mia answered. It's too dangerous. He could crash into something. He'll wait until dawn tomorrow.
They passed by a cluster of taverns. Each time one of the doors opened, they were blasted by loud laughter and revelry. As they walked, Henry and Marcus recounted their investigations that day. When they had both finished, Henry lowered his voice a little and spoke to Marcus.
"What will we do after tomorrow?"
Marcus hesitated.
"We'll just have to see what tomorrow brings," he finally said.
"But if we can't find the flying man in the morning, will we follow Mia somewhere else? What about completion?"
Marcus grumbled.
"I had gone almost the entire day without thinking about that."
"Oh, me too," Henry said. "Seeing you jogged my memory."
Marcus looked at him.
"Oh, yeah? That guy must have punched you pretty hard to get you to forget about completion."
Marcus sighed loudly before speaking again.
"I told you that we would be here in Many Chimneys for the day only, and I'm going to stick to that. We'll leave for home tomorrow, regardless of whether we've caught the flying man."
Henry nodded.
"It almost would be nice to spend an extra day or two here," he said. "I'd do it, except it would mean we'd miss completion. I'd love to spend more time in that garden."
"And I'd love to spend more time talking to the merchants," Marcus said. "Things are so much more different here than in Round Tower."
"I bet we could come back after completion," Henry offered.
"I doubt it. You'll have the entire garden to look over, and I'll become Dominic's workhorse. No, Henry, this is the last time you or I will have this much freedom for a long while."
That idea struck Henry. He noticed then that the people around him, walking home or busily making their way to the cafes, seemed to have a bright vitality in their movements. They chatted together, engaging in hopeful talk of the night ahead. They seemed to create an atmosphere of optimism around themselves. Henry himself began to feel isolated. Inside his mind, a sense of uncertainty was developing. The group stopped in front of a set of wooden doors. A sign nailed over the entrance read, "The Sleeping Dog Inn." Inside the ground floor, Mia communicated with the owner, a robust middle-aged woman with brandy-colored hair. The three were escorted to a few rooms above the cafe. The rooms shared a hallway, complete with a couch and armchairs, where the group met to discuss the following day. The map was unfolded before them.
"Lena said the hospital in the southwest corner was the highest place in Many Chimneys," Henry said. "But it's also surrounded by all the chimneys from the kilns. She said that the only place that was high and clear of all other buildings was this residential tower here."
He pointed to a square structure near the market.
"She also said that there were places there, like balconies and windows, where the flying man could escape from."
Mia traced the routes on the map with her finger.
"He could get to that tower through a number of tunnels," she said. "There's no way we can follow him there. We'll have to be at the tower already."
"We can stake out the entrances," Marcus suggested.
"It looks like there are four possible ways he could get into that tower," Mia said. "So we'll only be able to cover 3/4 of them."
She sighed. "We'll have to be vigilant to catch him." She lifted her head to regard Marcus.
"Are you two still committed to finding the flying man?"
"After all this," Marcus answered, "I think we've invested too much not to find him."
Then laughing, he said, "I just don't know what we'll do with him once we have him."
"What do you want him for?" Henry asked.
His voice was clear and direct, and it shook Mia. She looked down at her hands, not saying anything.
"I think it would help us understand what we're in for if you told us," he continued. "And I think you know more about him than either of us. Why are you chasing him?"
Mia exhaled.
"I'm chasing him," the words seemed bitter in her mouth, "because I want to bring him back home."
"So you know him," Henry said.
"We've been together for years. In some ways, he's the only person who knows me."
"Then," Henry paused and lowered his voice,
"why is he running away from you?"
Mia turned away.
"He's not running away from me."
"Something happened," Marcus said quietly.
He recognized the detached, distant feeling Mia presented.
"About a year ago," Mia began, "he lost someone, someone close to him. No one expected it, which I guess is exactly how this kind of thing happens. It was hard for the rest of us, but it really changed him. It created inside him a pain that began to eat away at his life. He stopped working, stopped taking care of himself. He became locked inside his mind, trying to remember the past to will it to reality. A restoration. I tried to comfort him, but he was dismissive. He wanted solitude. So I suggested that he continue with his project. He had been building this flying device for quite some time, and I'd hoped that if he took up the project again, it could bring him back. He accepted the idea and began working on the machine constantly. Every day I hoped he might get distracted from his pain, just long enough for me to catch hold of him and bring him back to reality. But every day he ignored me for the project. One day I went into the shop to see the progress and found the machine was almost complete. I was delighted, thinking that this might change him, but when I spoke about it, he became angry, yelling before he stormed out of the room. I didn't see him that night. The next morning, the machine was gone, and in its place there was a note. It said, "I can't do this anymore." The three sat motionless, the scene interrupted only by the occasional door opening or closing downstairs.
"How long have you been trying to find him?" Marcus finally asked.
Mia furrowed her brow.
"For a few months now, I think. I've been so focused on finding him that time gets muddled."
"And you haven't seen him until now?" Henry asked.
"I've seen him several times, but he's always too high up. I can never reach him."
"Maybe tomorrow could be the day he comes back to you," Henry said.
"I hope for that. Every day he seems to get further and further away. I feel like I'm running out of time."
Henry and Marcus were quiet again.
"See what you two got yourselves mixed up in?" Mia said, eyes on the floor. "You're probably regretting coming here."
"That's not true," Marcus answered. "I think it's better that we're here, helping someone out, rather than staying at home and doing nothing."
Mia nodded, eyes still on the floor.
"Tell me something," Marcus continued. "If you and the flying man are reunited tomorrow, what will you do?"
Mia pursed her lips.
"I hadn't really considered it. I haven't allowed myself the luxury of daydreaming. In my life, I've learned how painful disappointment can be."
"Well, then, I think it's about time that I told you that Henry and I just happen to be the best flying man trackers the house has ever seen, so you can feel comfortable in daydreaming."
Henry laughed. He could feel Marcus turning up his charm. It was one of his most remarkable traits. Mia grinned.
"I suppose I really should have checked out your resumes before we started," she answered. "Okay, so..."
She paused, her smile growing.
"When I find him, I'm going to take him back home. We'll open up our shop again."
"You have a shop?" Marcus interrupted.
"Yes, we sell machine parts, mostly to the manufacturing firms in the eastern part of the house."
She paused again.
"I guess I just want things to return to the way they were. He and I have both had it rough in the past, before we met. He changed my life. I want to be there for him now."
"You have been," Henry said. "For all these months, you've been there."
Yes, Mia said. "We should get some rest. We'll have to be ready to go tomorrow before sunrise."
"Okay," Marcus said. "But one last thing. What is the flying man's name? I've been dying to know."
Mia looked at him.
"He is also known as Fisher."
"Thank you," Marcus said, satisfied.
Mia retired to her room.
"I don't think I'll be able to sleep much tonight," Marcus said. "I'm pretty excited for the chase."
"I don't know that I'll be able to sleep either," Henry responded, thinking that his insomnia would be for an entirely different reason. They said goodnight to one another and entered their rooms. Inside his, Henry laid down on the bed, slowly stretching out his arms and legs. The events of that day raced about inside his head. He felt as if he'd lived for an entire month in that one day. Then, the thought of returning to Round Tower for completion came to him, accompanied by that pang of uncertainty he'd felt earlier. He closed his eyes and tried to force his thoughts in another direction. He was tired, though, and within a few minutes he'd fallen asleep. In his dreams, he traversed through an enormous garden, extending as far as he could see in all directions. With every step, he discovered new vegetables, fruits, and flowers. A knock on the door evicted him from his dream, and as he awoke, listening to Marcus speak, he felt a little sadness. They prepared themselves and left the inn. It was decided that Mia would guard the west entrance, the most likely place for the flying man to appear. Marcus and Henry would guard the south and east entrances, leaving the north unattended. The ground floor of the tower contained a few offices and a small hive of mailboxes. It was quartered by the four doorways, with four stairways in each quadrant. At their arrival, the vicinity was quiet, but as the day continued, more and more people appeared, some hurrying off to work and school, and some headed for the market. After an hour, the sun rose to brighten all of many chimneys. Henry had begun to doubt his detection skills when he heard a commotion behind him. He looked to see a man being helped up from the floor. "What happened here?" he asked to a teenager watching the scene.
"Some woman ran by and knocked him over," she answered.
"Ran by? What did she look like?"
"I don't know," the girl said. "I think she had dark hair. It looked like she was following somebody."
Henry's heart shot to his throat. It began pounding.
"Where did she go?" he asked. "Up there," she said, pointing to some stairs in the corner. "What a jerk."
She said something more, but Henry had bolted to the stairs so quickly that he hadn't heard. He powered up them, dodging the residents who flowed downward. He came to the next level and dashed across the hall to another set of stairs, which he flew up. When he leapt up to the third floor, he saw a woman disappear around a corner down the hall.
"Mia!"
She halted as Henry ran for her.
"Come on, hurry," she said.
Soon Henry was running beside her through the maze of hallways on that floor.
"Where's Marcus?" she asked. "He must still be downstairs. How close is he?"
"He was just in front of me. Come on, we have to go faster." They encountered the next set of stairs and climbed up them.
"There's just one more level after this one," Henry informed Mia.
They dashed to the next stairway.
"Okay," Mia said. "When we get up there, you go left and I'll go right. Check all the doors and windows. He'll be looking for a balcony."
The stairs squealed as Henry and Mia pounded up them. They reached the top floor.
"Mia, good luck," Henry said.
She looked at Henry, her stony expression temporarily morphing into a weak smile.
"Go," she barked, and Henry shot to the left.
He made his way to the first door and shook the doorknob. It was locked. The next one was too, and the one following it. He glanced around at the windows in the hall, but none had anything other than a short ledge outside of it. He tried another door further down, but it didn't budge. He whipped around a corner, breathing fast. The doors here were all locked as well. Turning another corner, he saw a line of closed doors on one side of the hall. He looked to the other side and found a similar procession of closed doors. But at the end, one door stood open. He sprinted for it. He burst into the apartment, looking around wildly. He ran to the left but found a kitchen, a dead end. He flipped around and ran through the sitting room and around a massive iron stove. There he stopped. In front of him was a set of glass doors and a balcony, where Mia and a man were standing, talking. The man's prominent jaw bounced up and down as he spoke. He had high cheekbones and green eyes. His brown hair shook in the wind. His machine was strapped to his back. They seemed to be arguing, and Henry felt no need to interfere. Mia, eyes red, kept pointing to him and then to herself. The man backed away. He shook his head, said a few more words, and then turned to face away from her. Mia was quiet for a moment before she said something more, motioning at the horizon. The man looked up and stared in that direction, examining the jagged outline of the house far away. Mia inched closer to him. She leaned in close to his ear and whispered. He spoke one word. Then the two stepped up onto the balcony railing. Mia slipped her hand into the man's, and they jumped. Henry felt sick. He shuffled toward the balcony door, his feet unable to work properly. A burst of wind assailed him as he made his way to the edge. He swallowed hard and peered downward. He saw them. Together. Flying. Mia was curled up in the man's arms, her head resting against his chest. Her eyes were closed and her face was still, calm. They slowly ascended into the sky, toward the rising sun. Marcus spotted Henry coming down the stairs. He walked carefully, slowly, with his hands in his pockets and his gaze set down at his feet. Once Marcus successfully flagged him down, he barraged Henry with questions. Henry provided matter-of-fact answers with little explanation. His mind seemed to be elsewhere, but Marcus could not help but ruminate on what had happened.
"I wonder what she said to him."
He got no reply from his friend. They sat on a bench outside the residential tower. Henry watched the crowd of people move about.
"And what really bothers me is that I didn't get to see any of it. I'm the one who wanted to be here, not you, but I spent the whole time standing here seeing nothing. I feel cheated."
Henry looked at him.
"I think it was a good idea that you weren't there, for Mia's sake," he said. "You would have bothered the flying man with all your questions."
Marcus punched him in the arm.
"I have an inquisitive mind," he said, holding back a smirk.
Then he sighed.
"One that is going to be utterly wasted as an assistant to the council."
"You are right," Henry said.
"I don't want to go back home."
Henry turned his head to watch two children with backpacks walk by.
"We might not have to go back," he said. "I mean, not permanently."
"What are you talking about?" Marcus asked.
"Okay, so we kind of have to go home for completion, because without that we could never have a profession or be full citizens. But we don't have to stay home. I've been thinking..."
"Good," Marcus interjected, his face brightening. "What?"
"Maybe we could keep doing this. Granted, we came here on a wild goose chase, but I've learned a lot from being here. I know that the things Lena showed me in the garden could be used back home. And so that made me think, what other innovations might be out there to learn about? I think I could convince my dad to let me travel around the house, collecting all the best ways to grow food."
Marcus grumbled. "Wonderful. So you can write to me about all your travels while I'm waxing the tables in the council chamber."
"Well, you'd travel with me, too. I bet my dad could convince Dominic to let you go."
"You think so?"
"Yeah. The situation would be mutually beneficial. You would be able to live out your dream of seeing the rest of the house, and Dominic would be rid of his biggest nuisance."
Marcus considered it.
"Well, I don't know if I'm his biggest nuisance."
"Big enough that he won't mind letting you leave. He might even throw you a going-away party."
Marcus smiled.
"You really want to do this?" he asked. "I thought you were content to stay home and plant beets."
Henry rolled his eyes.
"There's more to me than beets. I'm inquiring, too. Don't think you've cornered the market on curiosity."
"We shall see," Marcus answered. He stood up. "Let's go back home, then, but only for completion."
"Only for completion," Henry said.
He rose from the bench, and the two pushed their way into the flow of people.
You've just heard House Chronicles, Part 2, written by Jeff Sink. Want more of The Unbodied? Go to theunbodied.com. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.